Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It is the 16th of this month, which means that my sense of overwhelm is totally justified because I totally don't have time to finish all my work. So I think technically I should not be podcasting or blogging for any reason whatsoever. So, how are you?
I'm tired. It's Sunday, or it's Monday morning, and I'm still tired from Sunday. It was very nice. It was a good Sunday. We had a lot of people.
I do think that God is good. I don't understand why.
It's nice of you to say that.
All the people have to come at the end of the year.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, lots more people coming, right? Not as things are winding down exactly.
So we wanted, like, at the beginning of the fall, because you know the COVID's over and everything. We wanted to have like a massive Sunday school opening with like lots of people showing up, but they didn't show up.
Well, some of them did, but we didn't have like visitors and new people.
Right, but
integrating.
No, our people showed up, but we didn't have. So we were hoping though that we'd have a big growth spurt with COVID being over in the beginning of the. Did we say semester?
Like, I don't know what it's called. Yeah, it's not a semester.
That's when like church goes in semesters, isn't it? Like the fall is like when
the scholastic time.
Yeah, if you have kids in your church, your church year does.
Start in September.
Right.
Yeah, it's like Advent for a... Right. I mean, that is sort of terrible. Remember we used to have, what's it called, where there was a special Sunday where everybody came back to church because they took the summer off? What was that called?
What was the name of that Sunday? I forgot the name of that.
It was like Christmas or Easter.
Incoming sermon or Sunday. Or,
it was a liturgical time.
Yeah, it was. What was the name of it?
I can't remember.
Because we put it into it because that like communicated the expectation that you take the summer off, like you all have to, take. We're not going to see you. It's June, so we won't see you until September. When we're going to have our in gathering Sunday. I think it was in gathering,
because of the outspreading.
No, you don't take summer off from church. I mean, I think it probably originated with people thinking, well, you know, everyone's going on vacation, so it'd be nice to have a nice party when everyone gets back. Okay, I understand that, but the party communicates.
We moved the church picnic to August, not because you can go away all summer, but because it's warmer than having it in June.
That's what it was. It was the the reason it was in June is because that's when everyone stopped going to church.
Yeah.
It was a party at the end of church, and then the party picked up at the beginning of church. Yeah, no, that doesn't work like that. So we stopped that, but still people do informally take the summer off from church.
Well, I was kind of hoping to informally take the summer off of church.
Yeah.
And that other people would do all my work. I don't know how well that's going to go. Maybe. We'll see. So, yeah, on account of how suddenly the church has grown in size, at the liturgical time of year when I was not expecting that, I'm really tired. Happy, I'm not looking a gift horse in the mouth. What is the origin of that expression?
Well, like you check with horses. I mean, I don't know anything about horses, but apparently that a horse will tell you if it's sick if you look at its teeth or if it's bad quality. So if someone's giving you a horse, it's bad form to like
see if it's a bad horse.
Right. If you're buying a horse, you check its teeth, you check its mouth. But if you're being given a horse, you don't check its mouth because you're looking at a gift horse and it's like rude. It's like,
that's not what I meant to say then about God. It wasn't the metaphor I was looking for. I'm not sure what I would replace it with. I don't know. The listener might be able to tell at this point in the podcast that we don't really have any particular subject today.
Well, we should, because, like, massive things are happening. Like, if Roe v. Wade is overturned today, I'm having a party. I'm calling I'm calling off all the every bit of work, even though I have a funeral tomorrow and a Bible study.
Never mind, guys.
But we should have this. We should do something, because that's like I said on Twitter, and everyone, of course, follows me on Twitter. That we should have a feast day added to the calendar if Roe v. Wade is overturned. Because it's like Christmas, it's like Easter.
It would be amazing. It would be like a Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Yeah, yeah. There should be at least a week-long Christian festival, like Shark Week.
That's weird.
Right? You see that meme?
Shark Week? Oh, yeah. No, now we have Shark Week.
Yeah, the Christians.
Yeah, if you take,
Toyota-thon. Yeah, yeah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, why put that meme in the... In the
podcast notes.
Yeah.
The show notes.
So if you...
We should do show notes.
Right, yeah. So all the show... Most of the things that we talk about in the podcast are usually linked by Anne in her blog, where she links the podcast. But I just clicked on it last week, and I didn't notice any of the things we were talking about linked. It's like, I mean, you just randomly... What? You just randomly decide not to talk about the things we're... Linked the things we're talking about?
Well, last week, we had a big problem because... My computer wouldn't start. It wouldn't even, like... So we podcasted later. And then we were in a... I was in a wreckage of time. And so I threw it up without knowing even what we had talked about. I couldn't find links, even.
Oh.
So it wasn't intentional. If you want me to post things, you have to send me the links yourself. That's probably what the rule has to be. I can't wander around online looking for every little thing that we discuss on our...
Okay, well, that just makes our podcast just that much more random.
Okay. Well, I feel like I'm already giving a lot of time to this endeavor just by showing up. I have a ministry of presence, basically. It's just who I am, not anything else. I wanted to talk about what we were reading, but you didn't. I did want to say, this young person who shot up this grocery store in Buffalo is from here. He's from New York, the town where the church...
Conklin.
And he went to, for one semester at least, to Broome, where our daughter is going, and apparently did very well in engineering, and somehow was also spent a few days in the local mental ward, but was not, nobody followed up. And so he was on people's radars not being okay, but again, nobody followed up. And so he, didn't get, I mean, he did this horrible, horrible thing. So I think community is going to be, is deeply sad, of course, and horrified.
I just read a tweet that said that we should, basically saying, if your pastor didn't preach on this yesterday, then he's wrong. Because every pastor should have preached on the shooting. And...
Well, I think that would have been traumatizing since from here. From here.
There's this genre of shaming.
Shaming pastors.
Like, yeah, like, so have you talked about this? What's wrong with you? And usually it's like a current event that someone thinks is super important that pastors need to address from the pulpit. And sometimes there are things you need to address from the pulpit, like, you know, in 9/11, I think you had to say something. But the purpose of preaching is to exposit a biblical text. It's not to exposit current events. It's not to apply even really horrible current events. It's not.
I mean, if something happens and it correlates with the text, I suppose.
Yeah,
but I mean, you're really excited about Roe, and you didn't preach about that.
No, I didn't.
You could have. I suppose.
I prayed about it. We prayed about both things.
We prayed about both things. I do think, like, the prayers of the people are literally there, so you can
pray about the things going on, and the sermon is there so you can talk about Jesus and the gospel. And actually, preaching the gospel does actually address
like the reason can work it out
for the shooting and for 9/11 and for
everything,
like, everything and what God has done about it. So, I guess I did preach about the shooting.
You didn't mention it. Right. Well, so, yeah, well, then we didn't have anything. I thought we should talk about what we were are reading, but you don't like to do that.
No, you said that. Why don't you just... Well, now we started the podcast, so we might as well do that. We don't have anything else to talk about, so you go ahead and do that.
What are you reading? Why don't you like...
Hey, Ann, what are you reading lately?
Why don't you like to talk about what you're reading?
Because I always talk... I don't read it. You read things that are interesting for podcasts, like you're reading Nate Collins' book right now, which is an interesting thing for a podcast. I'm reading... I just got finished reading... my second biography of Caesar Augustus, and now I'm reading another World War II book. It's like one of the epic World War II books going through the whole thing. So that's not interesting for podcasts.
And I got to say, like one.
And I got finished. Okay, I do have one book that I'd like to talk about, but see, that's it. I'll be nerding out, and no one will listen to what I want. No one will care. It's like it's the book about the Anglo-Saxons, which is the new history of the Anglo-Saxons, which is only out in audible, I think. It didn't come out in print, but it was awesome. It's an awesome thing to see, but and to read. But and we read that history of Spain together. But see, this isn't it. I can tell you right now, like someone who's listening is already like falling asleep or turning off the podcast. So, but why don't you talk about the book you're reading, because that would be far more interesting, I think, to our listener than anything I'm reading.
I read both books called Spiritual Friendship. I read Wes Hill's Spiritual Friendship, and then I went back and read A.O. Red of Ravo's Spiritual Friendship book. And now I'm reading All But Invisible by Nate Collins, Exploring Identity Questions at the Intersection of Faith, Gender, and Sexuality. And I'm more than halfway through, but it is taking me longer than I wanted because I keep getting so, I don't know what the word is. Like, I guess the fact that the book exists at all is I'm having a hard time with, because Nate Collins is married to a woman and they have three children, it says on the back. And so he's in one of these things that they call a mixed orientation marriage, meaning that she's a quote unquote straight heterosexual person and he's gay oriented. And so, but he believes that marriage is between a man and a woman. And so he got married to a woman. And speaking as a woman, if I was married to a man who then spent 300 pages explaining, trying to give theological reasons for why it's okay to experience deep attractional desire for deep intimacy with people who were not me, my feelings would be so hurt, I don't know if I would be able to go on in the marriage.
That's the whole problem just calling it.
Like mixed orientation, like you should be oriented towards.
I don't want to be oriented toward you. I'm
like my orientation is not a vague thing out there; it's directed towards a particular person. That's why I don't like you don't have to call me straight or heterosexual, whatever. I don't have a sexual identity. I don't.
Well,
I refuse.
Female.
Right, I'm female. My attractions don't matter to anyone in the world except for God and the person that I decided to marry. Like it is not a thing. And I know that like the premise of the book is that it is a thing and everyone has it. And that nobody can say that they don't have it, but I am saying no to that.
Yeah. So that's a queer theory assumption that everybody that like you have to find out what you're attracted to and then you know, plot yourself on the gender spectrum. And it's completely antithetical to Christian faith to do that. There's nothing in the Bible that even gives us any reason to do that. And so, you know, if you're male, you are to be oriented toward your wife. if you don't have a wife, you're supposed to be oriented toward Jesus and confess all of your lustful thoughts about anybody to him and recognize you're made male. And that means that if you are going to have a sexual expression, it's going to be with a female. But you're not going to, if you don't want to, if you want to have sexual relations with someone who's a male, then that's a sin to confess, right? And ask God to help you. And if you want to, if you're a male and you want to have sex with lots of women, that's a sin to confess. you need help. So if a man, you know, a 19-year-old man, 20-year-old man gets married and he really wants to have lots of sex with other women, which I would say probably most men looking at porn, that's what they're doing. Then he doesn't say I'm in a mixed orientation marriage because my wife would like, you know, monogamy, but I want lots of women. So I'm just going to write a book about how I really like to sleep with lots of different women.
And I hope my wife is okay with that.
I can't because I'm a Christian, but I really, really want to. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create intimate friendships with these other women and where we say vows to one another, but we don't have sex. But it's okay for me to do that because we're not having sex.
Because the only thing that matters is really
attracted to other women.
I mean, that's essentially the whole book in a nutshell. Like, okay, so can I just read this part? This part is kind of the tenor of the book, and it is also, I keep writing yeah, no in the margins. I don't write in my books usually, but in this one I am writing so much stuff because otherwise I won't get through it. But, okay, can I read this?
Yeah.
Some might recognize the differences between a committed friendship and two people who live together as roommates, but might nonetheless point out that two or three gay people who live together is more like the somewhat questionable scenario of a man and a woman who decide to be roommates.
Yep.
Than two or three guys or two or three girls who decide to live together as roommates. And at first blush, this sounds like a valid objection.
And the second blush. Wait, that actually makes me blush.
Many would rightly object to the idea of a straight man and a straight woman wanting to live together indefinitely.
Yep.
Particularly if they shared everything from meals to the bed they slept in.
Yep.
But not as a married couple. Okay. Paragraph 2. As airtight as this objection seems, it is a straw man argument. And I was like, okay. I wrote down.
Let's hear the straw man.
Wait, what? Okay, just check any roommate wanted ad and you'll see that women want female roommates and men want male roommates. If they were looking for something more, they wouldn't be posting an ad for a roommate. We shouldn't discount committed friendships for appearing to be something they're not intended to be. Committed friendships between gay people who are embracing celibacy are intended to be just that, celibate.
Roommate wanted ads
is not how you figure this out.
That the comparison is a straw man, because I know of mixed sex roommate situations
in which they intended
to go into this just for a roommate situation. They weren't looking to have sex with women or men or whatever. They were just doing roommate.
It's like every single TV show in America.
Three's Company.
Yeah, that's an old one.
The whole point of that was the sexual tension that existed between the three.
Funny. And then everyone after that, too. Right. Not just that one. Like, that was the first one, and it was sort of shocking.
Right.
And then after that, they thought, okay, well, this is an easy trope. We'll just do this again and again and again.
Of course the want ads don't say that because I don't think people think that. I think in general most are just looking for housing.
Roommate.
Oh, look, here's a woman who will be my roommate and that will save on my rent. And so great. She'll sleep in this room and I'll sleep in that room. Wonderful. And oh, wow, she's really hot.
One of the funniest parts of 44 Scotland Street is the narcissist Bruce, who does his hair in an ombre style with some kind of clove gel, and he wears like tiny, tiny skinny jeans, and he advertises for a roommate, gets a female roommate who falls in love with him, and he's like, yeah, she should fall in love with me because I'm so awesome. And it's funny, it goes on for chapters and chapters while everybody in her life is like, this guy is a narcissist, you should not be attracted to him. And it's fun because that is what happens when people who want to have sex with other people room together without the bonds of marriage,
right,
as the
right
necessary factor.
So that in fact the comparison is exactly like four gay men moving in together under the auspices of some kind of monastic situation. No, don't.
So, and he undoes this idea of a straw, this being a straw person, because he says if two gay people decide they want to pursue this form of kinship,
yeah,
it would seem that a wise course of action would be to involve at least two components. First, the two individuals would need to pursue pastoral counseling to help them confirm that this is a viable course of action for them. Ideally, the pastors who counsel them will also know all of the parties involved and be in a position to offer their solid support. No.
And well, then, no, this was going on. This was happening in an ACNA church. This is happening in an ACNA context. There are these little arrangements, and pastors get in and act like they're giving pastoral counseling, and I one pastor even gave the vows for these people.
I mean, that is asking people to say, "I was literally born yesterday." Like, yeah. I don't know how human people work. I don't know anything. I've never heard of the sexual drive.
Right.
Or my child coming to me and being like, "I just, you know, yeah, I want to go be a camp counselor at a camp full of young women." Yeah. And I happen to be a man, but it's going to be fine. It's for Jesus.
Right. It may be, you know, it's sad, but it may be that if your attractions are such that you are sexually drawn to people you cannot have sex with morally, that your friendships with them will also be somewhat distant, not intimate.
Yeah.
Because you just can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that that's like, yes, but this is 300 pages telling you that no.
Yeah. Revoice, spiritual friendship.
So, okay, wait. The second component I have in mind involves a distinction I will make in part two about a difference between physical and emotional unitive intimacy. What this distinction means in real life is that it would be wise for two gay women, for example, who want to pursue a vocation of celibate partnership, to be open to the possibility, if only in theory, that a third party might join them in the future. So I'm in the part where he's trying to talk about the difference between physical and emotional unitive intimacy. And again, though, I feel like there's something straightforward about...
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely...
That he's trying to make... not straightforward.
There's definitely, I think what you're trying to say is we can be friends, you know, because you have friends, do have like male friends who are not, who don't want to sleep with each other, do have emotional bonds, and that's a good and right thing. It's called friendship.
But they don't have the same bonds that they have when they marry a woman,
right? And it men and women can have friendships, and it works. But
when they get those emotionally unitive bonds and they're married to other people,
what tends to happen?
That's not good.
Okay, two things. Emotionally unitive bonds between men and women almost always have involved.
That's like shared core experience, emotionally unitive bonds. Like,
there's almost always, unless there's a huge age difference between the two, there's almost always a sexual tension there. I remember having lots of quote unquote best friends as a kid in high school. I did. They were friends. They were nothing more than that. But there was always, hey, this is also a woman and she's attractive, and
that's what gave the relationship some sparkle.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly. So when you get married,
all the sparkle needs to go away.
The intimacy that you have, and this is another part of the book we should talk about, because you mentioned the intimacy that I would maybe have as a single man with a single woman, as a friendship intimacy, not a sexual intimacy, needs to go away, and that needs to shift to my wife, that friendship intimacy.
Yeah.
And then when I'm a single man, if I have, of course, you're going to have female friends, but you don't move in with them. And like we were talking about, you don't move in with them to create a deeper emotional bond.
I just feel like
you might move in there with him, thinking that you're just going to have, like, you know, a rent issue again. But
if you do that, you're just deluding yourself.
You're like holding everything is so delicate, and it just, you know, the sexual stuff. It just takes one day, one night, one, hey, let's have a bottle of wine and celebrate graduation or whatever, and boom, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the plot of every single story in the universe.
Right.
I mean, and yet somehow, suddenly, we're supposed to think that
it's a brand new, sparkly thing.
It's not the plot of everything. Right. And the sexuality is both supremely powerful, so much that it's the whole course of your identity.
Yeah.
And also that it is not powerful at all, and that you can totally control it. Don't you worry about me.
You blogged about this on, it was last week, I think, because we were, because there's also this kind of notion that, oh, well, the only reason you're thinking this way is because evangelicals create this myth of, like, male sexuality that's super strong, and female having a different kind of sex drive than men do, and it's all a myth, and men can control themselves totally without any worry about it at all, and that's all just patriarchy talking. Well, we read Don Quixote in the 17th century, and there's a story in Don Quixote about a man who a foolish man who decides that he doesn't know whether to trust his wife's chastity or not, so he asks his best friend to try and seduce her, and his best friend doesn't want to, and his wife is faithful until, I mean, she wasn't thinking about cheating on him.
It's an ongoing. I'm not sure. I bet that Lewis took the plot of The Impertinent Curious Man and made Per Landra out of it, because the way that the Eve character in Per Landra is tested over and over and over again for many, many, many days and weeks. Like, there's a temptation that happens, and it's not just a one-time thing. It's like she keeps saying no, and the Satan character is, like, allowed to keep at her, and finally Ransom has to, it puts that person to death, and she doesn't fall, but it's this wearying thing where she's this onslaught of temptation just day after day after day, which I feel like, yeah, it's The Impertinent Curious Man. Eventually she does fall and everybody dies, but that's what you're doing when you live with someone,
right,
who you might potentially be attracted to. You're putting yourself in temptation's way over and over, and it's like living in the Garden of Eden and every day being offered something you really want and having to say no.
Right.
Continually, like water dripping on a stone. It's the stupidest thing.
Well, so the reason I brought up Don Quixote, though, is that apparently Cervantes was a 20th century evangelical male. because the expectations about male sexuality and female sexuality that many of the quote-unquote woke say were created by evangelical patriarchs are right there. In fact, if you look at the way men and women relate in traditional societies, there are always safeguards, because everyone knows that if we don't chaperone
the youth,
they're going to have sex with each other. And we don't want that to happen.
And that's why, like, you have, you know, there's extreme examples of women only together. Like, there's no, I shouldn't use that word. No conversation between the men and women in any situation until the family has said, now you're married to each other.
And that's not because of 20th century evangelicals. No. That's because human nature, fallen human nature is such that sexuality is volatile and you can't.
And yet, I mean, I want to say, like, it doesn't have to be the totally defining thing about your personhood.
Right.
Like, I think it should say something radical. I want to say the traditional way of thinking that it is a strong, strong thing, but that it's not like, it's so strong you have to safeguard it, but it's not. There are other things about life that can have meaning and give you purpose. So I don't know. I feel like that's maybe a really radical thing to say. And I'm the crazy one.
Yeah, I mean, I know gaslighting is an overused term, but this whole thing is this whole idea that you're acting like sexuality is volatile and it's not is a major gaslighting on the part of
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Ricky voice and Spirit of Friendship crowd. But Wes Hill, who's big in the spiritual friendship thing. You know, he was interviewed by the Episcopal Church News Service, and it's another. I think this is probably inevitably where Revoice and spiritual friendship will go. But he left the ACNA, he joined the Episcopal Church, and he was interviewed, and he is just really wanting to have unity and Christian fellowship with Side A people. Right, Sunday Christians, he calls them.
Yeah.
Right, so he's now willing to. I'm not sure where he was before. Maybe he's always been willing to do this, but he's now referring to people who are leading people into sexual sin as Christian brothers and sisters.
It's an issue we can disagree on, he said. Like,
Yeah.
he said it explicitly. We
Yeah.
can all disagree and still be with each other
At
in
the
the
table.
church at the table. And
That's
so,
just not what Jesus says about
no.
this at all. But you have to go there. So,
Well, here's the dog. And also, I think we should go on with our lives.
it 32 minutes? Oh, we've gone 32 minutes and 5 seconds.
Yeah. I didn't even tell you about the second book I'm reading, which is I'm re-listening to Brideshead Revisited, which I love so much. It's a great book, and incidentally, if you're looking for sort of the languid, decadent, kind of disordered, quote, spiritual friendship of the spiritual friendship movement, it's perfectly described in the beginning of Brideshead, and of course, there's no sex, but it's like, you're listening to it and thinking, no. But anyway, that's another. The writing is beautiful, so that's fine. I just want to say one more time, and then this is the end. I wasn't born yesterday. And even the day after I was born, I was also probably I had been born yesterday, but I was.
You're not allowed to form. You are not you personally. You're not allowed to form deep personal friendships with other
Well,
men,
neither are you.
and
You're not either.
I'm
Like, we're not
not
doing that on account of
to
how I wasn't born yesterday.
develop the
And when
intimacy.
my children come to me to say, I'm there's something special about this thing, I'm
He's just
pretty
my
much
friend.
like, no.
No, we're just gonna
We're
go
just
on a
friends.
trip together
Want
as
to be.
friends, and it's gonna save money to stay in a hotel together.
Yeah.
No, 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 no.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.